Hi, listeners. This is a quick thank you for listening and for your ongoing support. If you're enjoying the program, please consider clicking the follow or subscribe button if you haven't done so already. It really helps us out. There's no better way to support us than doing that or sharing the show with a friend, colleague, family member, or any new or expecting parent in your life. It's totally appreciated. On with the show. Hi, I'm Sarah Trott, and welcome to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. I'm a new mama, and this podcast is all about postpartum care for the first few months following birth, the time period also known as the fourth trimester. My postpartum doula, Esther Gallagher, is my co-host. She's a mother, grandmother, perinatal educator, birth and postpartum care provider. Fourth trimester care, our topic, is about the practical, emotional, and social support parents and baby require. And importantly, it helps set the tone for the continuing journey of parenting.
Hi again, listeners. It's Esther Gallagher. Sarah's not with us for this podcast, sadly, but she will be on the next one, I'll betcha. I'm here today with Z and Jeanette from Our Family Coalition, and we'll be talking about their involvement with this wonderful organization and how it serves them and their community. But I'd like to start off by reminding you all that we have the option for you to subscribe to us. We have a newsletter, fourthtrimesterpodcast.com. You can go and get this information. You can friend us on Facebook and all that other crazy social media stuff. And you can also go to our Patreon page and help sponsor us. Sarah and I do all of this out of our own pockets and hearts, and we're thrilled to be able to do that. But there are some costs that we're not going to be able to sustain for long. So anyway, hope you're all having a great day. And I'm going to have our wonderful guests reintroduce themselves and tell us a little bit about who they are and really spark your curiosity about some stuff that I feel is super important. And I'm so thrilled to have them on the podcast today. So Z, why don't we start with you? Tell us your story about becoming a mom and your community and how you were led to OFC.
Sure. I'm Z Nguyen, and I am a mother of two. I have a toddler who is a little bit over 2 years old and a four-month-old, so that's pretty new. We identify as a queer family, so my wife and I got married in 2013, but we've been together, this month actually will be 8 years.
Congratulations.
Together. Thank you. And before meeting her, I didn't really sort of have an idea of wanting a family or babies. So it's definitely wrapped up in falling in love with my wife. So we always knew part of the falling in love with each other was sort of this vision of having a family together. And it took us a few years to sort of get into the right place with our careers and our relationship. And then when we went down this road, you know, we had to really figure it out. So as a queer couple, it's a very different process than it may be for straight couples. We had to figure out, where do we get the sperm? Who's going to carry it? How are we going to do this? How are we going to pay for this? And then, you know, sort of as we went down the path, it was a lot of other questions sort of came up, like what does family look like for us as a queer couple and two people who want to raise our family in a very, very expensive town like San Francisco, where we don't have any blood relatives around. And I grew up with, my mom has 10 brothers and sisters. So I had a lot of cousins, and I grew up where multiple families lived in one house. So that was definitely something I thought family was supposed to be as. So going from that to a very nuclear family was, imagining that was hard. So we had a lot to figure out. So, you know, I hope I can sort of go in a little bit more detail about that today. But maybe Jeanette, you can introduce yourself first.
Okay, great. Sure. So I'm Jeanette Page. I'm a family programs coordinator at our Family Coalition. And our Family Coalition is a nonprofit organization. We're located in San Francisco, but we do events and programs and work throughout the Bay, and also do policy work throughout the state, if not sometimes nationally. My work is really around working directly with LGBTQ parents and their kids. And so I help coordinate parent-child play groups, support groups, parenting classes. And we also plan some really fun, larger events. We do Pride events, which are, we're kind of in the midst of planning right now. So that's where my head is. And personally, I came to OFC really randomly. So I've been on staff about a year. And prior to that, I was working for about 10 years doing sexual assault prevention work. And was feeling like I needed a change. I personally identify as queer. And so when I sort of stumbled upon our Family Coalition, I was like, wow, that's so cool. I've never seen anything that does that before. Mm-hmm. I've never seen an LGBT organization that actually focuses on families, mm-hmm. Queer families. So when I saw the job posting, I was like, wow, I want to work here. I want to be involved in this. And it's actually, it allowed me to connect different pieces of my personal and professional work experience all in one position. Mm-hmm. So working directly with people, doing direct service, doing social justice related work, because working with queer and trans people means we have to engage with social justice and we have to engage with anti-oppression work. And I grew up in a home that was a daycare run out of our house. So
that's handy.
So I've actually been able to go back to my mom a lot with this job and say, how did you deal with parents in this situation? Or how did you set up your, you know, childcare space? So it's been really fun and interesting to me to be able to put all of that together and to get to work in a cool place like mm-hmm. our Family Coalition and with awesome families like Z's family.
You guys are a godsend in terms of family supports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so great. Maybe if you don't mind talking a little bit more about when you and your wife are actually ready to go out and find sperm, because you had to do that, right? Mm-hmm. That process, insemination was part of the process. Mm-hmm. These are all details that I think, you know, hetero couples never have to think about unless and until they have fertility issues, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And so, or so-called fertility issues, like that's a whole nother ball of wax. But maybe you can talk both about maybe your journey a little bit and then how our Family Coalition may have been able to offer support, or maybe even there was a way that you came to our family to further and broaden the ways in which they could do their work. So I know you're involved in the organization directly, and so that's kind of a wide open question. Sorry.
I will try to answer all parts.
Okay, great.
Yeah, you know, as a queer family, we have I see it as a burden and a luxury, the luxury to really be intentional in creating our family, because we can't just, whoops,
Yeah.
You know, I accidentally have a child. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of intention to create our family. So I find that, I think that's a really good thing. So we have, you know, as queer families, we really have to be ready and want to be parents. And the burden part then is like, it's the actual creation and going through that process. So for me and my wife, I had this very specific idea that of this queer family structure. So we have no, you know, male counterpart because we're not in a heterosexual relationship. And so we could have chosen to just go to a sperm bank. And I think that's sort of the often when people think about, you know, two women having children or, you know, we go to a sperm bank and it's that image of Ellen, you know, sort of right. with that box and what was that movie? If These Walls Could Talk.
Not only that, but that you just do that.
Right.
That is somehow simple.
Right. Mm. And it's not. And it's even not. That is, I mean, sperm's expensive, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how much it is now, but, you know, I think we were paying almost $900 a pop. And that's for one vial, one shot to try it. And mm-hmm. if it doesn't work that one month, then you got to do it again the next month. Mm-hmm. And actually, we didn't end up doing that, or we didn't at first want to do sort of the sperm bank. And getting our sperm that way. We actually wanted to meet somebody who would be sort of part of our family. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily rights and things like that, but more like in the queer community, we call them like a dunkle, a donor uncle. So we wanted something like that, a dunkle. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted my children to have some sort of male figure in our lives. I didn't want to sort of erase that completely. And when questions came up of like, you know, on the play yard, like, you know, you have two moms, but where's your dad? Mm-hmm. I wanted them to be able to say, you know, I don't have a father, but, you know, I have my uncles or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And plus I knew that creating a family required more than just a mom, a dad, or two moms or two dads. That it really takes a village to build a family mm-hmm. and to survive as a family. And so I loved, and again, I came from a family with a lot of people, a lot, aunts and uncles and cousins. And, you know, somebody was always picking me up from school. It wasn't always my mom. She always worked, or, you know, I would hang out at this person's house or that person's house. Or we shared the responsibility of the children, or they shared the responsibility of the children together. And so that's what I always imagined. And so that's what I wanted. I wanted something that was a less conventional structure of the nuclear family, because I knew like it's hard work. I watched my mom do it, and for a big chunk of it, she was a single mother. Mm-hmm. And so we tried a couple of, you know, a friend, and we tried approaching a friend, and it didn't work out. I mean, it's a huge responsibility, and I appreciate our friend for really taking the time to think it through and saying, like, I don't know if I'm ready for that responsibility. I would have loved, you know, our family coalition does a egg meets sperm, mm-hmm. and that wasn't around then. I mean, this was only 3 years ago, or I didn't know about it then. Mm-hmm. And that would have been, it's an event, a mixer where it's exactly how it sounds, right? Like women and men and everybody in between who might want to be looking to create a family in mm-hmm. a different kind of structure. Because it mm-hmm. isn't always like a coupled, whether that's, again, straight couple, gay couple, or queer couple situation. I would have, you know, definitely sort of checked that out to see whether it worked out. But so our sort of friend's choice, and as we went down that road together, it didn't work out for us, but we know a lot of families where it does work out, where there's a friend who donates and then is part of the kid's life as the child grows up. We randomly, we needed a plan B as we were waiting for a friend to think about whether to be the donor. And so we just did a random search, and the first person we found happens to have the same ethnic background as my wife, half white and half Italian, half Asian. And it was just like the person just, he had the same birthday and birth.
Whoa.
Yeah, as birth month and birth year as her. His dad was a special ed teacher. I'm a special ed teacher. So it was like these little weird things. We're like, oh, this is the guy. And we were like, this, we called him Plan Bay.
Nice.
Plan Bay. And then Plan Bay just ended up being Plan A. And it's great. I mean, we have two beautiful, beautiful children. I was really, really lucky. We're both civil servants as a teacher, and my wife is a police officer. So our insurance covered it. Being in the Bay Area, they covered the insemination, which would have cost like $2,000 or $3,000 per try. It took us 4 tries with our first child. And then I was really lucky with the second one, just 1 try. And we just had to pay for the sperm. But you know, I have so many friends who had to go through also so many different rounds, multiple rounds of IVF, donor sperm, donor eggs, you know, friends who just used other friends, at home inseminations, in house inseminations, midwife inseminations. There's so many different ways to make a family.
Yeah.
So many different ways to make a family.
I'm so happy you're naming, you know, just listing all those ways, because I think honestly, you know, the average person out there who might be right in the thick of the same issues you had 3 years ago, or how old is your daughter, your older?
She's a little bit over 2 now.
Yeah. You know, they'd be starting from 0. Mm-hmm. They would maybe have no idea of the options. So if they knew of one thing, they would head in that direction. But gosh, hearing that there's such a thing as midwifery, you know, midwife insemination might really appeal to them. Or
and it's actually, it's cheaper than going to Kaiser. Like, we went to Kaiser and had a doctor do the insemination, but
and Kaiser's probably cheap compared, you know, I mean, compared to so many other possibilities. So thank you for making that list. Years ago, when I first moved here and was doing postpartum care through a little woman-owned agency called the Fourth Trimester, which doesn't exist anymore, but was really wonderful. I'm so happy I sort of had my beginning years of being a postpartum doula with them, because they were so supportive in many ways. But I expressed a particular interest with the owners that whenever there was an opportunity to go to any kind of offering out in the world here in San Francisco that was directed about helping LGBTQ folks make family, that I would really like to go learn and perhaps support, you know, represent the Fourth Trimester. And gosh, I just feel so lucky. I mean, I live right down the street from the women's building, and the events were always there, so it was really convenient. But there's just, you know, so much of what you're talking about now has been evolving over those many years. I mean, that was 25 years ago, right? So the insemination of so many things you're talking about really started a long time ago. But as I say about so many things having to do with family making, each time somebody decides they want to have a child or gets pregnant, as it were, it's as though they have to reinvent the wheel, because somehow when it comes to making family in this culture, it's not something we all know all about. We're, it's as though we're kept in the dark until we you know, have to do it. And then we have to figure out how, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always thrilled when these sorts of resources can be more widely kind of broadcast and people can learn about them, that they do exist. Mm-hmm. You don't have to start from scratch. You know, there are entities that will help you navigate a little bit when it comes to all this. So that's really wonderful that you're mentioning that.
And then the blessing of things like technology, like podcasts and social media, is like being able to connect with other people who are going through the mm-hmm. things that you're going through. I mean, so part of our story is as we were trying to figure out this whole process, we joined a group called Baby Buds, which was a mostly queer conception group. So it was like a conception support group.
Oh, brilliant.
And we learned, and it was just random. I was friends with a woman who was friends with another woman and connected us through Facebook. And then we, you know, they knew the founder of the Baby Buds sort of group. And I think we were Baby Buds 6 or something. So we were like the 6th sort of group to come together. And that was a model of support that I had never seen before. And I think they tried to do a Baby Buds 7. I mean, I really hope that
they keeps
can sort
going.
Of do... Keep
I'll see if I can track
like
them
that.
Down to, for the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Right. That we would love to have some folks like that.
And we were, I think there was I want to say maybe there were 6 or 7 of us. It started bigger and then sort of some of it whittled down and then it was just sort of a core group. But even as we were a bigger group, all of us were in sort of some of these places of conception, right? Mm-hmm. Of figuring out conception. And there was so much collective knowledge in the room that it was just beautiful. This mm-hmm. is exactly what we needed to do as a society, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. if our society wasn't the way that it was more sort of, you know, I don't know, before sort of civilization times, we would be our mothers and our fathers and, you know, everybody would teach, it would be integrated as part of our culture to family, how to build family.
And oral history.
Right. And how to support each other through a variety of, you know, whether that's like infertility type things. But it's just not the case. And you do have to take, you know, you have to work to put this together, but it's there and there are. And I think there are people with things like Facebook, people want to be connected. People want to build those support structures. Mm-hmm. And then you can find it, whether you're here in San Francisco, where we have all of these resources and we have a wonderful organization like Our Family Coalition, or you're in, you know, another place where you might think that you're the only queer couple in that small little town. And
You
might be surprised, and it might be a quick sort of Facebook little connection and finding other families nearby.
Even other families that just accept that you're queer and are happy to, you know, support you would be better than feeling all alone.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I want to ask you a question. From this perspective, so as you know, I'm a birth and postpartum doula. I've been doing it for a long time in the Bay Area and in my earlier life as well, some midwifery work. And over the years, I've worked with handfuls of lesbian and gay and other identified families. But from your perspective, Z, especially, if you... were looking into the community and thought, gosh, it'd be great to have a birth doula or a postpartum doula. Our family could really use some care that understands these transitions mm-hmm. from every angle. What would you be saying to upcoming doulas, say, that would be really special if they understood when they come to support your family, mm-hmm. so that you're not explaining.
Yeah.
I mean, I recognize that as I was coming up, you know, I was in a situation where every now and then I needed some explaining, mm-hmm. right? Some, you know, graciously, the families I was working with could give me some perspective on this or that, mm-hmm. right? I wasn't a complete dummy, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm very, very, you know, wide open, and very much motivated to work with our community in this way. But I still needed some explaining. And if I could have saved those families those moments of explanation, mm-hmm. I would happily, mm-hmm. you know, if they could just assume that I already knew. Mm-hmm. So from your vantage point, what are a couple of things that would be just really handy for support people? It doesn't have to be doulas, right? Yeah. But let's say your non-queer friends or family want to show up, and they've said, we want to show up and help you, mm-hmm. right? Like, the rest of the podcast addresses a lot of stuff, as you may know, like how to be helpful and what not to do. But what would you like to add to that list of do's and don'ts?
I think, you know, sort of thinking about, if I was thinking about, you know, for the most part, you know, our friends are either queer, or the ones that are not, like, have been in the city or been, mm-hmm. like, around enough queer folks to sort of, you know, how to navigate certain things. But sort of thinking outside of that, like, the, if you didn't have a lot of knowledge about our communities, or how would you approach, you know, how I would want a person to approach that in terms of supporting our family. I think the, you know, first would be probably, you know, sort of respecting gender identities, sort of not sort of making assumptions about who might be the birth mom or who isn't. So mm-hmm. one of the things that happens a lot is I may have given birth to the children, but whenever Jen is holding the children or holding the baby or something, then people and are talking to us, then people assume she is the birth mother. Or oftentimes, because of the way that we look sort of gender-wise, I look more feminine. And she sort of has more of that sort of stereotypical masculine kind of look, then people assume I'm the birth mom because of how mm-hmm. I'm gendered. And, you know, they put us in these heteronormative sort of boxes. Like, mm-hmm. you look like this, you're sort of the man role. You look like this, you're sort of the female role. Mm-hmm. And those are, you know, still slight assumptions make a big difference mm-hmm. in how somebody may talk to a queer couple. So like I can imagine as a postpartum doula, if you weren't there right before the birth or something like that, mm-hmm. then you might sort of come meet a couple and make an assumption and address a person, you know, as they assuming that person is the birth mother or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sort of those little uncomfortable situations, mm-hmm. you know, suck for us.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel
they're good. They're not small.
Right.
Yeah.
They're not small for us, exactly. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel good. So a lot of people might...
I mean, that's just a wonderful... thing for everyone in the world to understand, right? Like mm-hmm. we need, you know, whatever relief it might be in all kinds of differently sort of identified, as it were, families, mm-hmm. if we could release some of the tension of what mm-hmm. strict gender roles are about.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there are queer families where one of the partners is a female to male, mm-hmm. right? Yep. Right. And they may be fine with being identified as quote unquote the man in the right. relationship. Mm-hmm. And they might not. Mm-hmm. Like there's, why would you assume
right.
based on how they look? So, and not only that, can you even assume based right. on right. how they look to you?
Mm-hmm.
You right. can. There's so many things about that. And, yeah. and, in my fantasy world, even fairly, so-called normative identified heterosexual couples, like what a relief it could be to any number of men,
mm-hmm.
right, to not have their dad role so tightly identified
oh, yeah.
in terms of how they care for their children.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's very,
it's so
gender sort of expectations are very strong in our society.
Hi, listeners. I have some exciting news to share with you today. We've partnered with Every Mother, your go-to destination for evidence-based exercise therapy regimens. Whether you're dealing with diastasis recti, preparing for birth, or navigating postpartum recovery, Every Mother has your back. With personalized daily routines tailored to your core and pelvic floor needs, they're here to support you every step of the way. Say hello to a stronger, healthier you with Every Mother. Visit their website today and use code 4thTrimester10 for 10% off your personalized regimen. That's fourth spelled out, F-O-U-R-T-H, trimester10 for 10% off, because every mother deserves the very best.
Especially mm-hmm. around children and around yeah. family building.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's when we really notice like gender binary,
mm-hmm.
gender roles, mm-hmm. and how we start putting that on kids before they're even born.
Mm-hmm. First question is always,
right?
Is it a boy or a girl?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Well,
and we get it even in the queer community.
Mm-hmm.
I get
yep.
a lot of that as well. And I think this is being out right beyond, there's my baby.
Well, and I will just say from the perspective of postpartum care, and maybe from the perspective of a twice single mother, I think the assumptions that go along with who needs what and what kind of care and support in families based on this strict identity of gender roles is crushing families,
mm-hmm.
any family of any community and identity. The assumption that you don't do certain things,
no.
because you're the man,
right?
That you could be doing
mm-hmm.
and that could be supportive of
right.
your family, and that all of those jobs land on somebody else because they have breasts
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
that can lactate. Like,
right.
ugh, it's so crushing.
And it's just, it's confusing for queer and trans couples or queer and trans parents because, like, you know, there may be two cisgender, like, women partners, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one could give birth and then the other one could potentially be lactating and
Absolutely.
Nursing, right?
Yes.
And so if you see someone
Work
nursing a kid,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't necessarily mean they're the person who gave birth. And
mm-hmm.
so I think when we're stepping away
or
from gender binary.
If they didn't give birth, they shouldn't be breastfeeding.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Any number of
exactly.
possibilities there. Yes.
It just kind of opens up things for people. I think a lot of people see our family coalition. I know working there, myself, my colleagues, we come to our family coalition. And we're like, whoa, this really blows things wide open for mm-hmm. us in terms of what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't think of LGBTQ people as like potentially having families.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like mind blowing for people in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
It creates a lot of possibility. And I think one of the reasons is because like we don't do our programming in a gender binary way.
Yeah.
We can't, it wouldn't work, but also,
yes. Yeah, the job pretty quick. Yeah.
But also it's harmful. It's harmful to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you're right. It harms cisgender straight people too.
Yeah.
You know, we've had conversations in our programs about trans dads mm-hmm. who are, they'll think really hard about whether or not they want to carry, like they have the capacity to get
mm-hmm.
pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But just the way they might be treated by society.
Hi, Enzo.
Hi, Enzo.
The way they might get treated by people on the street or even by their family and friends, it makes them question how they would want to approach whether or not they want to be pregnant, whether or not they want to have family in that way.
Yeah.
And I think that's a shame. I think that that shouldn't be a factor in whether or not people decide to become a parent or decide to pursue parenthood.
Yeah. It's, I mean, the world would just be so much more fun and interesting. Let's face it.
Right. It would be.
You know, if what we are, what we consider normative was so much wider.
Right.
Yeah. I'm waiting for it.
Yeah. And better for kids too.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean,
giving kids that's the biggest, kids learn the best from sort of role models and seeing the wide possibilities of family structures. And, you know, I feel really grateful to sort of be in this time period of history in terms of, you know, I buy all sorts of books and I think I went of that show structure, families, different family structures, some that are like ours and some that are even different from ours. Anything from having two moms to two dads to single parents and adoptive, you know, family structures. And I get to read those books with my kids and they know that it's like it's families come in all sorts of shapes and sizes.
Absolutely.
And it's so great to be able to teach them that there is literature that they're reflected in, that their family structures are reflected in, other family structures are reflected in. So, you know, I feel very grateful that we, at least, you know, we're moving in that direction.
Yeah. I will say, as somebody who would probably be considered a cisgender heterosexual identified woman, I've been a single mom twice. And if I'd known that there was a possibility of raising my kids with a queer couple, I would have jumped at it. I really would have, because I honestly am somebody who doesn't want to be in a normative relationship. Like I'm not interested in a nuclear family style of doing things. It didn't work for me anyway. Whatever attempt was ever made in that direction wasn't how I could do things. And gosh, if the possibilities had been wider, I wanted to have kids. I'm thrilled that I have my two children, but they needed better support. They deserve better support than they got.
Probably needed the support
and
too.
I needed a different kind of support that wasn't defined by a heterosexist society, for sure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Where everything falls on one mother who's supposedly the person who gave birth to these children. And that you're supposed to do it all on your own and you're supposed to be completely thrilled about it.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be so happy.
Right? Nothing's ever wrong because this is the epitome of your life.
No matter what.
Right.
No matter your socioeconomic circumstances. As you can tell, like, I'm always thrilled when there's just more resource, whatever forms of resource they are, for whatever kinds of families there can be. I'm so happy to get to hear about it, and I'm so thrilled you could come. Zee, tell us about your offering at Community Well.
Yeah, so, I mean, part of my process in this family building was coming to this place where I realized I don't have any, you know, sort of blood relatives around, and I needed to build my own family structure here. And so building community became my sort of my thing. You know, I had such a hard time sort of letting that go and find, you know, a lot of crying nights of like, we're going to have to do this all by ourselves. And then
I only laugh because I know what you feel like.
Right?
Yeah.
And then I was like, no, you know, I sort of kicked into gear and just sort of became a, just started seeking it out. Mm-hmm. And I, like I said, I joined this conception group, which was helped us sort of build on our community together. So some of us did, got pregnant and have kids like all around in the same age. And then some of us, so some of us continued our friendships and our kids are friends and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And one of the couples started a group at Community Well for queer families, because it is a different structure where when you get together with other queer families, there are things that you don't have to, you know,
navigate. Like, yeah.
Right. Sort of explain. And there's a level of comfort in being around, you know, other families and our kids to see other families that look like our family. Mm-hmm. So that was very important. And it was, and so we do a monthly meetup. And I ended up taking over the group to run it. We do a monthly meetup the first Saturday of the month at Community Well on Ocean Avenue. And it's great. You know, we have new families that show up, and it's the small, it's, you know, I hope it's been sort of a model of the older the families who have older children can sort of help the new families in terms of, oh, your baby's doing this. Like, it's okay. It's a phase. Like, here, you can try, you know, this or this, or this is what really worked with my kid. And I really try to push families to figure out other families who live in the neighborhood and just continue outside of the 1 month meetup. Mm-hmm. So in conjunction to that, and it's an OFC sponsored, we also have a queer family hike. So sort of doing that once a month as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've just sort of connected with other families who are in our group, but live in the neighborhood to just do play dates. Like the support system I have now that I sort of really worked to create is so broad now that I can call on other families, and we would do things like date night swaps. So mm-hmm. I drop my kid off at their house, you know, 1 week, and the next week they drop their kid and go on a date night, and not, you know, have to spend, $100 on a babysitter or something like that. And just simple things like that. Mm-hmm. Even now, you know, I've been struggling with doing the whole two kids thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's a whole other ball game, I didn't realize. And I've been calling on my community a lot. Mm-hmm. In all honesty, I am suffering from postpartum depression this time around. Mm-hmm. But I didn't the first time around.
Yeah.
And my community has been such a huge, huge support in helping me feel more grounded and getting through this time period, you know. Mm-hmm. People, friends who are coming over at night to help out, who are coming over with their kids just so my toddler can have somebody to play with so I can focus on my infant. Mm-hmm. Those things are huge.
They are. It's really true.
Yeah, it's huge and can be created.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
I agree.
It's there. And people want, you know, people want to be in community.
They do. Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
And we know that so much of depression is the antidote is community, right? Is breaking through a sense of isolation and all of that. So good for you. Good for you. I mean, there is a way through this.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also it's hard. Like, I think what's a shame is that in our society, individuals have to kind of do that on their own.
Yeah.
They, right. Mm-hmm. Like, you had to build that mm-hmm. in for yourself. And people shouldn't have to do that. Mm-hmm. I think it's amazing when people do. And one of the things with our family coalition, with our family support work, that's the whole point, right? Is we're trying to create more spaces for peer support, for building community, for sharing information with each other, whether that's like an outside, you know, quote unquote expert, use that term lightly, coming in and talking about something. we'll edit that out later.
Okay.
Or, you know, it's just people who have been through the experience sharing their own wisdom with people. And so, you know, that's sort of like the basic tenet around family support anyway. And yeah, it's a huge protective factor against things like postpartum depression, but against so many other things too. So yeah, our OFC really tries to be there in as many ways as we can. For San Francisco, we're actually a First Five funded population specific family resource center.
Fantastic.
So that's really cool and really unique. I don't know of another LGBTQ family resource center anywhere else in the country. There are a couple other organizations that work sort of on the policy level or maybe the informational educational level around LGBTQ family building, but the fact that we do that and we do direct service is pretty unique.
That's so great. And how do folks find you?
People find us in all different ways. So locally, word of mouth is huge. So word of mouth is big, but also people have found us through Googling. We put all of our events up on Meetup. People have found us through Meetup, through Facebook, through, you know, other media. And it's interesting because there's this little gap between maybe like support for the LGBTQ community in general, right? And people might be involved with organizations or entities that provide that. And then if and when they decide, okay, I want to start a family, there's this gap around, well, okay, well, what do I do? Where do I go? Who can help me with that? Where do I find this information? And then people feel like they're back at square one. And so we do get a lot of people just like finding us because they needed us. We do have a website. It's ourfamily.org. So you can Google us, you can type it right into your browser. And then we're also connected through some of the other organizations, like you can find us on Family Equality Council's website, I believe, because they have a listing of LGBTQ family groups around the country.
Oh,
I believe
that's good to know.
Most of them are volunteer run.
Can you say that again?
Family Equality Council, I believe they have a directory of mostly volunteer run LGBTQ family groups.
Fantastic.
And so you can find us through there or you can Google us directly. Family support's huge. It's a big deal. And even if it's just for the sake of like, I just need to be around people who are not going to treat me like the token gay in the group, or, you know, treat me like I'm strange because my family doesn't look like theirs or my family building journey was different than theirs was.
Sounds fantastic. Anything you'd like to add, either of you, before we wrap up? This has just been so rich and great. So thrilled you could join us today. But is there any little tidbits that we missed so far?
I think I just like to say it's important for families, whether you are, you know, straight, gay, somewhere in between, that we all know how important support is. And especially if you are a queer family in an area that doesn't seem to have any other queer families, that we can, you know, I love that technology has gotten to the point where we can connect in a variety of ways. And even just a simple, like, message board posting or listening to a podcast like this, finding other people or, you know, finding a group on Facebook can be life-changing, can be really life-changing. You don't have to feel like you're doing it alone. I think it's mentioned multiple times already. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. Like, there are people who have gone through this forever, have built families and are trying to make it as a family and be healthy and loving. And there are other people out there who want to be connected with you.
Definitely.
And I think for anyone who's listening in the Bay Area, our Family Coalition is absolutely a resource for you. So if you're looking for information, for referrals, to connect with other LGBTQ families, or to get more in-depth support, we're here for you. And for anyone who's living in the California area, we're here for you too, in that we do a lot of statewide policy work. We're working right now on a lot of Fair Education Act implementation work. So helping to recommend LGBTQ inclusive textbooks for different grades and different areas of study. We also do lots of policy work, both statewide, local, regional, some national. So the work we're doing hopefully will benefit everyone. And so you can always reach out to us. If we're not in your area, we could try to connect you with someone or an organization that's closer to you.
And I just want to tack on here that I've said often on this podcast that, you know, this podcast is for everyone. The subject is the fourth trimester, but everyone has, who's been born, experienced the fourth trimester. And everyone who may give birth or be part of a new family is going to experience the fourth trimester, whether you're the birth mother, the partner, the cousin, the grandmother. Like, there will be a fourth trimester in your life again someday, possibly several. And just as that is true, it's also true that someone you know and love, whether you know it or not, happens also to be queer. Mm-hmm. So they may have a fourth trimester in their life. They will have had at least one when they were a baby, and they're very likely to have one sometime again. And so we can all learn how to be better with each other, especially during this period of family making. So I hope you enjoyed the podcast today. I hope you share it with all your friends and family. I hope there are things that you'll take forward into your life that you learned about today. And thanks so much, my guests, for coming today, Z Nguyen and Jeanette Page. Sorry, it's one of my favorite names. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next time on the fourth trimester. Bye.
You can subscribe to this podcast in order to hear more from us. Thank you for listening, everyone, and I hope you'll join us next time on the fourth trimester. The theme music on this podcast was created by Sean Trott. Hear more at soundcloud.com/SeanTrott. Special thanks to my true loves, my husband Ben, daughter Penelope, and baby girl Evelyn. Don't forget to share the fourth trimester podcast with any new and expecting parents. I'm Sarah Trott. Goodbye for now.
Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing all that you can. I wrote this song simple and true. I wrote this song, I'll sing a song for you. You got your wheels, you got your gears. You ride around town with out any fear. You got your pedals, you got your brakes. You always wear your helmet for safety's sake. Thank you. Bicycle Man. I know you're doing all that you can. I wrote the song simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you. Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing the best that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you.